You're listening to PodcastJuice.net.
Did you know that Podcast Juice is premium content? Well, check out Podcast Juice All Access. Join today and get instant access to over 9 years of great classic podcasts, members-only shows, and more exclusive content. Go to PodcastJuice.net/All Access and join today.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Podcast Juice. You're listening to the Classic Joints. This is Michael Dean. This is a new show where we're going to get into a lot of classic genre busting, you know, tent pole type of material, whether it be albums, music, movies, you have it. But today we are starting with a definite classic. Another phrase we'll use is essential juice. Shout out to Sean Hill. We're talking about Michael Jackson's landmark album, Off the Wall. We had some requests from some of the listeners that we start reviewing some other albums and classic movies. So we're going to start that today. Joining me is, of course, my brethren. You know, I cannot ever do this alone. So we're going to start off with welcoming Mr. Big Sexy and Sack. How are you, sir?
I am well. I've been waiting for this one. One of my favorite albums. This is an essential album.
All right. Next up, Mr. Sean Hill. How are you?
I'm doing well. I like Big Sexy. This is an essential jam album. I'm ready to get it on.
All right. Mr. Q Storm, how are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. I did my research, and I'm ready to get this going.
All right. Last but not least, I'm going to stop putting him in the last section. I don't know. There's some reason why I might be doing that. Maybe because he's the youngest. But he's always first in my book. Pause.
Ew.
There was a pause.
Yeah, I ain't trying to catch a beat down from Tori.
Mr. Ampu, how are you, sir?
Nah, I don't mind being saving the best for last. I don't mind that one bit.
Okay, Vanessa. Yeah,
now, I'm going to be honest that my Prince fandom would not allow me to state a Michael Jackson album isn't essential. But for this podcast and this podcast only, I don't know.
Listen, Ampu, and I am no expert, but as a person who likes Prince probably just as much as you, I'm going to tell you to take off the Prince shades for 1 second. This album, I don't care who you are, you could be in any kind of genre of music. This is just damn good music. I'm going to say this as we get started. Every music owner, I don't care what genre you into, if you don't have this album in your collection is not complete. It's just a classic album, period. It's just music. It's great music. So let's get this thing started, man. Michael Jackson. We all know who Michael Jackson is. I'm going to say it. One of the greatest entertainers, singers of all time. He's one of the greats. You know, there's no question about that. This was his album that was released August the 10th, 1979. We're taking us back a little time.
Okay, my mother's birthday.
Oh, right on. And so this album came back then, produced, of course, is produced by the legendary Quincy Jones, also Michael Jackson. Songs were written by numerous people, Paul McCartney, Stevie Wonder. One of the shining stars in this album, Rod Temperton. He's Heatwave.
Thank you. Yes,
he's done a number of classic songs over the years for different artists. The guy is spectacular. David Foster is also playing on this or wrote songs on this. And then the musicians, endless. Some of the best dudes to put it down. We'll talk about it later. But Louis Johnson, Wawa Watson, Sheila E. is. It's been revealed that she's on this album as well. George Duke, is ridiculous. Greg, I always mess up his name. Phillin' Gaines. The guy's a monster. He is on this as well. And so this is something I really want to talk about. Let's get into this. So without further ado, go ahead.
To that, this is the best thing to come out of the Wiz.
Yes, I would agree with that.
By far.
Wait. Okay, you got to school me. Explain that one for me.
Quincy and Michael met while he was shooting The Wiz, because Quincy did the music on that, and that's how they kind of started collaborating together on this project.
Do you know which scene they met on? Do you recall which scene they met on? They met on the scene when he was hanging up on the when we first introduced Michael Jackson in the film, where he's strapped up to the pole, and he walked up to him and started talking to him right then and there.
A captive audience, I guess.
right on. Yeah, I mean that's one of those moments in time, right? That's, man, let's hook up. How you doing? Okay, and they go on to create not one, but really two remarkable. Actually, well, you can say they created three remarkable albums, but that's where it starts. This is also Michael Jackson's, I believe, first solo album with Epic Records.
Yes.
I believe prior to this, the Jackson's Destiny album, did that come out before or after this?
That was before.
Destiny, yeah.
It was before.
I think Triumph came out after this.
Triumph, right? Thank you. Okay, yes.
Exactly.
And Destiny is a banging album. Like, I was rocking that too. So I was really sort of primed. And I believe I was all of probably 9 years old when this album came out. But we'll get into some personal stories later. So let's get this thing started, and we can all chime in as we go along. First track on the album, Don't Stop Till You Get Enough. And we're going to go around the room as we always do. So I'm going to start with Q-Storm, man. Give us your thoughts on this track.
Well, this is what I would say is the quintessential way to start an album. I think this song, and I could be talking out the side of my neck, but to me, this song is like it's like that post-disco sound. It's like the intro, the intro to the song, and the feel of the song bridges that gap from where we were coming off that disco vibe and starting to go into a new era of R&B, but we brought a little bit of that disco with it. It also, for me, this song starts a trend of Michael putting on one just long groove on his albums. This is just that groove where he doesn't move too far from the essential melody. There is there's a bridge, a non-vocal bridge, but the whole thing is just there's a groove and it just plays through for a good 6 minutes. Like the same thing with Wanna Be Starting Something, the way You Make Me Feel, Can't Let Her Get Away from Dangerous. I'm going to say Money from the History album. Just that one track that's like, let's just play and let's just see what happens. It's just banging throughout. Now, I will say that this is not my favorite song on the album, but it's a great opening song. And the thing about it is that Michael Jackson starts the album with this pure, crystal clean falsetto, and it just is the smoothest thing going. I like the song. Like I say, I listen to the song. It's not my favorite, but it's still a great song, a perfect opening track to an album.
All right. All I would add to it is this is one of those songs, like many, where I didn't know exactly what he was saying, but I just knew all of the sort of the tones and the, you know, hey, mom, what the mom, oh. Don't stop thinking. I just knew the don't stop thinking. And for years... For years, that's just how I did it, especially as a kid. I mean, I didn't even think they was really saying nothing, but it works. Like, I'm just like, that's what I feel. It was like, you can just feel like it didn't matter what he said. The way he was making those noises was just magical to me. Like, I like it. I'll just add to you what you said is his falsetto and the singing, the voice. He's such a unique sound of his voice. That was just magic to me. And then it's funky as hell. The percussion and all the breakdown toward the end. It's just ridiculous to me, man. I loved this song when I was a guy. I still love this song. So this is just a perfect, to me, this is a perfect song. I love his voice, man. And I love the energy that he put in that. And this was also, I said Sheila E. Apparently Sheila E. did some of the percussion in this song. So I just like, wow, okay. But Aunt Pooh. What's your take, man?
Yes, sir. I got a co-sign Michael Dean's where he said he didn't know a goddamn thing Mike was saying. He just knew it was groovy and was just going to dance to it. That was the same thing that I had. The one thing I have to go with is that whole, that bass, that don't. That is totally, totally funky. And that little breakdown where, because I remember the video. Remember, I'm a kid, an MTV kid of the 80s. So all I remember is him walking in with five different Michael Jacksons, doing that little, whatever that was, with the pelvic thrusting pause.
You remember that?
Man, y'all are just so immature. Go ahead. Which I know what I'm talking about. Yes. That little part where he comes in to break down and they do that little groove, that little shimmy and whatnot.
I think it's just... And he thrusts his pelvis forward. We got it. Yeah. Oh.
Go ahead, man.
It's just going to be like that. So anyway, this track is hot. What I will say is that nobody can reproduce what Michael is doing with his vocals in there. Not Chris Tucker, not Liv Warfield and Shelby J, which God bless them. They do not do this song justice. And it's like the one thing that we forget about Michael Jackson, besides the dancing and all the movement he's doing and just the physical charisma that he has, is dude has a really great voice. And I would say just this is probably, I know I'll probably catch some heat for this, this is probably the last time where he just let his voice be natural and just sing with it instead of just trying too hard to emote on his music.
All right. Big Sexy and Sec.
You know, I'm going to borrow from Big Ken. Shout out to Big Ken. I'm listening to this song right now, actually, and I can hear the little, I believe you call it chicken scratch guitar. And this was at the tail end of disco, as you said, and there was a lot of orchestration, which was the Barry White influence, but there's a lot of I don't say big band, but there's a lot of orchestration in here, a lot of brass, and as Q said, it's a great way to open up the album. It's not my favorite song, but again, when you want to get people on the dance floor, it does not fail, you know? And it took me years to figure out what he was saying, you know, because he kept saying things in the beginning about, well, the force, it's got a lot of power. And then he just went into it, and then you hear the strings and all these other things, and it's a masterfully crafted song. It really is. You know, I don't recall who wrote this, if it was Q or if it was one of the outside writers or if it was Mike.
Michael.
But it was Michael wrote this. It was really masterfully put together. And this is something, again, this is something that transcends genres and transcends time and still stands up to this very day.
Yes. Hey, can I ask, I know we're going to go to Sean, but let me ask real quick. You guys are saying you didn't know what he was saying. I'm assuming that you guys, when you first heard this album, you were listening to the vinyl, and the vinyl had the lyric sheets on it.
Well, see, we had the 8-track.
And for me, I never owned this CD. So. Well, this album. I never owned this album, period. So I didn't have the liner notes.
I was going to add, too, I believe in the reissue or re-release, the anniversary edition, don't they have Michael's original demo of this?
Yes.
Song on there? Yeah, and that's really interesting to hear. But Sean Hill, what's your take on it?
You guys have pretty much said everything that could possibly be said about this song. I don't really know I can add too much to it other than I think Big Sexy hit on it. That opening, that with that doom, 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 him talking. And then when he hits that, ooh, and that all that music comes in.
Well, he felt that one, boy.
That's what I was gonna say. That's what I was gonna say. You almost feel like something was in Michael when he does that. It just releases this, and I'm gonna just say it: this orgasmic flow of symphony. And I mean, you got the strings, you've got the brass, you've got that whole bit, and I think everyone's touched on it. Although I don't think this is his best vocal performance. His best vocal performance is on a song on his album that we'll get into. I think this is pretty close, running a very close second as far as just him singing. And I'm not going to try to emulate it, but that part where he goes, until we don't know how, that part, that is just pure, pure Michael magic that the world misses. I have to tell a little backstory on this. I used to DJ a lot, little house parties back in the day. If I wanted to pack the dance floor, no matter what, I don't care what type of party it was, this would be the song that I would throw on and the dance floor would be packed. I don't know what it is. And like I said, I think it's just that beginning rush that it's just able to come across. But yeah, this is a great song. Even at, I forget how long it was, seven minutes. There's not a moment in it that I would say, this is getting too long. I don't think it's long enough. I think I should have been longer. And then the ending, we got just the guitar and it kind of fades out. Yeah, it's a brilliant track.
All right.
Now here's the problem though. If you had to ask me which is a better opening, this or Want to Be Starting Something, you had a gun in my head, okay, you got to say, okay, which one's the one, I might be a dead man because I don't think I could choose between those two. That's how good both of those songs are.
Cool. All right, next up, the next song is Rock With You. I'm going to say
wait, did we lose Tori?
Yeah, she's not here.
Oh, all right then.
Yeah, Rock With You. I'm going to do mine very brief and I'm going to let you guys speak on it. And actually, we're going to go to Sean again. This is, I would say this. This is American, or damn near world, one of the greatest R&B pop songs, period. I dare
say. Damn, Mike. You took my
Oh, go ahead. I hacked into your system there. But yeah, man, just pure golden. God damn. I don't care if this song was released 30 years ago. It could have been released today. Would be number one in any time you put it out. Sean Hill, Rock With You.
You said it. It's a classic R&B cut. Again, Michael's vocals on the other end of the spectrum, just as good. He hadn't developed I'll just call it the Michael Jackson isms at this point. So it's a natural kind of singing style. Everything about the song is good. Even the video, I think it was the first time we see him with the curl, the glitter socks. This is kind of the emergence of the Michael that will be with us for pretty much his whole career. There's nothing bad that can be said about the song, other than I tried to do this at karaoke about a year ago, and it was missing the magic of Michael, definitely. It's a great song. This is a great 1-2, and we're going to have a 3-punch. This is the definite 2 of the 1-2-3 punch. Great song, great vocals.
Yeah, the vocals, man. This is the thing that – one of the key things that I think is missing consistently from, the last 10 years or more of music – is that distinctive voice where a dude is just really just singing on a track. He's not doing all Mike got away from that, right? The pureness of singing, which is lost, at least in this genre in mainstream. And I ain't gonna speak for everybody, but it's lost, man. And that's why I think a song like this, I remember seeing a footage on YouTube, and I don't know what news program it was, CBS or 60 Minutes, and they did a whole piece on this, on Off the Wall Michael Jackson, but it was really about Rock With You. And at that time, it was the song, it was the roller skate song, particularly, I guess, in LA, and they were just like, everywhere you go, this song is playing. And it's like, this kid, Michael Jackson, like who we remember from, he has one of the biggest songs of all time right now. And I was like, man, that song. Here's the last thing I'll say. I had a guy over here a couple weeks ago, guy I'm working on, I'm producing his podcast. And we were just talking random stuff. And we were talking about like the power of speech and just sort of, people's energy that comes forth. And he just started going on Michael Jackson. He was like, man, there's this song I know about Michael Jackson. I don't know what it is, but you probably know Mike. But I remember we would just play that and we just listened to it over and over and over back in LA. And we went through it Off the Wall. And he said, oh yeah, Rock With You. And he was like, dude, I don't know much about Michael Jackson, but that song right there, his voice, I'm a fan for life. Like, and I was just like, yeah, man, that pureness you just hear. You actually feel like Michael really feels what he's saying.
Right.
And we can ride the boogie. I mean, that dude. Well, go ahead, man.
No, I was going to say, one more thing about the vocals, and I hope I don't steal anybody's thunder on this one. At the end, where he holds that the rock note, that note, and there's no, like you say, vocal inflections on it. It's just him holding that note. And again, just goes to show you what a brilliant vocalist he was. And given, you know, not doing the vocal tics, just pure singing is what, again, what he missed out on later on in his career.
Yep. Ampu, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm just over here having to take a listen to it. Just one last time, just to make sure I get all my thoughts right. To me, this is the second greatest Michael Jackson song of all time. The thing that I really like about this song is like he starts off with those nice, smooth, soft vocals, and then when he gets to that chorus, he gets all powerful and he get that manhood in him. It's like that transition from little boy to the man, which I think that's kind of a cool take on the song. And I think it's, if there is any song that you can cover, I think this, I mean, it might be kind of blasphemous because Mike did it so right, but this is like, to me, one of the easiest songs you could cover. And I'm like, if I was going to do karaoke, this would be the song, because it's easy.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Mike makes it seem easy, but
I am serious. I'm serious on this, because that was the reason why I picked this song, because like, oh, it's a nice flat tenor, and I can pull that off. No, couldn't. Pull
no,
it
you
off.
Can't.
And then at that 2 minute when he get that little breakdown with the little "I wanna rock with you" and "I wanna groove with you," all that part, I'm just like, okay, yeah, I'm cool. And this is like everybody said, this is like the skate song. This is like the beginning. This had to been where the genesis of Chicago two-stepping came from, because that's just all that movement is just coming from. You cannot not two-step to this song. And last thing I'll say,
damn, is Darth Vader on the line?
Maybe. Okay. Well, that last two last things. One, Justin Timberlake, you whore. I hate the fact.
Whoa!
Shout out to Sony.
I hate the fact that you stole this song for "Rock Your Body," which, you know, I give Pharrell props that he was able to interpolate. I think that's the proper term for this. This song for Justin Timberlake's debut album, but still, I hate you for that. And secondly, this proves once again that you can do subtlety and sexuality on music. I mean, he has lyrics like "Rock the Night Away," "Rock You Into the Day," "Feel the Beat," and you know what he's talking about. But he ain't got to say, "Babe, I'm gonna smash that ass all the way till morning."
Well, they didn't say that back then.
It's essentially what he's saying, but at least they're being creative and playful and somewhat poetic with their sexuality back then, which I wish today's musicians would do. Well, artists.
Hey, let me correct you on one thing, though, Ant. Pharrell wrote "Rock Your Body" for Michael, for Invincible, and really? Michael turned it down. Yeah, Michael turned it down.
As he should have.
That explains.
This is interesting. Pharrell's he's very talented, but it's another song where it's like pulling from some old song, repurposing it for something else.
He did an admirable imitation. Mm-hmm. Admirable, but you know, I just hate the fact that he gave it to Justin Timberlake.
All right. Big Sexy and Sack.
You know, "Off the Wall" to me takes me back to a time, and this, again, I'm older than you guys. Before the phrase "Quiet Storm" really took off, you'd hear things like "Rock With You" on like adult contemporary FM on the smooth jazz stations. The first time I heard it, because I didn't have the Omni, my sister had the 45 the first song. Don't stop till you get enough. And so I heard this on the radio. I'm like, "What's this? Oh, this is Mike." And it's got, to me, I was like, what was it, 79? So I was 15 at the time. This had a real adult feel to it, you know, like a grown-up deal. It's like Michael is growing up now. You know, he's not doing a Jackson 5, you know, "I want you back to love you, save you" anymore. This is him being a full-on adult. And again, I'll go ahead and take the ridicule too. I would not mind taking a whack at this at karaoke myself, because it's one of these songs that is so... I'm not doing it. But it's so, again, like I said earlier, it's so well crafted. It really just sings itself. It's effortlessly done, but clearly it's complicated and complex. And again, this is something else that holds up. The way they did the vocals, how Michael doubled and redoubled the vocals for the backup. You know, there was no, like Mike said, there was no of the Michael Jackson tics that we've come to know in his later work. None of that was present in this song. He just said, let me sing it. I'm going to sing it. And he knocked the hell out of it.
All right. Yes, he did. Q-Storm.
Well, goddamn, y'all done stole every damn thing I was going to say about the damn song. Let me just say a couple of things real quick, and then I'm going to get into my review of the song. First, I will floss a little bit and say that I did cover, I sang the song when I was in college, and it paid off in spades.
Where the record ending?
What's that? What?
Can we hear it?
You want me to sing it?
Oh, I thought you had a recorder. Oh,
get a cue. Get a cue.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's do it. It's an exclusive.
Please don't.
It's 25 years. I've just seen the first.
Please
girl,
don't.
Girl, close your eyes. Let that rhythm get into you.
It sounds like okay. Bill Cosby. That sounds like Bill Cosby with Michael Jackson.
That was not bad.
It was actually pretty good. It was good. It's just that you were doing it just funny, but it was good. It was actually really good.
If I had panties on, I'd be throwing them at you.
Okay.
Pause.
Okay. Anyway, I really don't hear any comparison to Rock Your Body with this track. I know I've heard you guys say that before. I just don't hear it. And thank God I don't. I mean, that's not a bad Rock Your Body's not a bad song, but it can't hold a candle to this song. But okay, so let me get on with my review. This song is just one word, flawless. Nothing should be changed. This song is perfection. It is pop perfection. It is R&B perfection. And when it starts, every time I hear that, even when I was listening to it for this review, I get chill. You can pause all you want. I get chill. I melt. Whoa. I turn into a little bitch.
At least be honest.
It's smooth. The vocals are smooth. The musical arrangement is smooth. This is one of the best songs ever written. Mm. This is the Billie Jean of this album, even though the tones, I'm not talking about from tonal or, rhythmic or melodic context. I'm talking about power. I'm talking about establishing Michael as that dude, okay? And I think Aunt Pooh touched on this. I love how his vocals progress. The first verse, his vocals are real whispery, you know, like he's sizing her up on the dance floor. He's sizing up old girl. And then as the song progresses, he turns into that Mac. He becomes stronger, knows he's got her. He gets her on the floor. He's like, this is going down. And this song, I mean, he was doing this before. Like, I'm thinking of Time Waits for No One and a number of other tracks. His overdubbing on his backgrounds are ridiculous. No one can do a harmony with himself like Michael Jackson. And I would pay thousands upon thousands upon thousands of dollars if I could go back in time and be a fly in the studio recording session to see how does Michael record his, I mean, from this song to Liberian Girl to, other tracks, Heaven Can Wait, Break of Dawn. But starting with this song, how does he get those vocals to be so in the pocket and just so tight? It's just brilliant. And just a couple of things I want to say that just struck me about this song, and I'm done. When I first saw the video, me and my partners was at my man's house who lived across the street from me. And we were tripping about how much Michael in the video looked like my friend. And I was hating that motherfucker and getting all the girls. And these motherfuckers said that I look like Billy Ocean.
Sarah Bill Queen.
They were talking about, well, you like suddenly, don't you?
That's
suddenly.
Wow. I'm like, They put you on some Billy Ocean.
The other thing I like about this song, whenever I hear this song, I'm sure you guys have all heard the live album. I yes. love how he goes into it. He goes that whole and then he goes into I think I want to rock. Love this song. I love it. This song is just perfection.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Shout out to Rod Tiverton, though, for writing such a great, great track.
Yes, yeah, we must big up this man here. He put his foot on this album, this song. Also, shout out to some of these musicians here. Bobby Watson on bass, John Robinson, the drummer. The horn section, man. There's trumpets in here, tenor, baritone, trombone. There was also a string arrangements. I mean, everything. I mean,
Claire Fisher, those strings.
I know, right?
off the chart.
Yeah, I mean, and this is real quick. I'm gonna go back to you. This is a clear case, man. This is what a real producer does. You know, he gathers the ingredients and puts it together. He didn't just make a beat, you know, and program a little loop or something. This dude worked with. There's so many people that are playing on this song and so many different parts and pieces apart with Michael's voice, which is the ultimate instrument as well. And Quincy Jones, I give him full props though, man. He's able to orchestrate and put all the pieces together and understand what makes great songs and how people will feel when they hear them. Go ahead, Q, you want to get the last one?
No, I'm just going to say the other thing about this song that I found listening to this album, I mean, you listen to this album so many times, you just kind of get inured to some of the things. You get jaded, but this song, the breakdown, the breakdown,
bridge or break.
Not so much a bridge, but just that instrumental breakdown in it. Yeah. Nothing is happening in there except for that. I want to call it a flute. I'm sure it's a keyboard, but that part.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all it does. Nothing happens. Nothing changes. But the shit is banging. I mean, so, that happens throughout. You find that repeating through all these songs, but it's a breakdown. There's no guitar solo. There's no keyboard solo. But it's just perfect.
If that song were made today, that's where Drake would be doing his thing.
Somebody be talking over.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, baby, so, I want to rock with you.
So cute, because since you seem to got orgasmic about this song, you trying to tell me that Mike wouldn't have needed that Jesus juice for you?
The fuck is your problem, wow, dude?
Come on, let's stay on point with the music. Anyway.
I'm not too old to slap a youngster.
Yeah, we stand. This is a special podcast, so we're going to keep it focused on this stuff here.
One thing, Rod wrote, I think, 4 songs for this album, and of course, obviously, this is the best one. But the one that he wrote with Michael's vocal inflections in mind isn't one of the better ones, which I think is kind of interesting. But I know we'll get to that when we get to that song.
All right, and also I wanted to add there have been people that have tried to cover this song over the years.
Brandy,
which was on the Quincy Jones album. No.
I thought she did okay.
Yeah, I mean, all right. It's okay. Ashanti, apparently, I've never heard it, but Ashanti, hey, the singer, she did some sort of remix cover.
Ashanti Moore?
No, Ashanti from
Murder Inc.
Murder Inc. Apparently, she did on the BET Awards or something. Chris Brown performed this song live at the Essence Festival. Kelly Clarkson.
Wow!
Tried to get on.
I gotta go see.
Yeah, me too.
Mariah Carey and Trey Songz did this live in concert, apparently. So there you go. Classic track. All right. Next up is "Working Day and Night," and we'll flip it up a little bit. We'll go to Big Sexy first on this one.
Now, see this one, and I can go ahead and admit this because you know we're all men of the world here. It's really up-tempo. I couldn't dance to this because it was too fast. You know, I tried to keep up with this and I almost break my neck. And this is, to me, where Mike started doing the little ticks and whatnot when it first started. I like, and I'm going to use Q's phrase, and I'm probably going to use it incorrectly. I like when they got to the breakdown, you know, during the chorus. I'm so tired now. Love that song. Loved it. Can't dance to it. I mean, that's one of those songs that you got to be in shape. And if there was like an extended mix to it, I'm sure bodies were dropping all over the disco, because this the tempo was so upbeat, and you had to be on top of this, and I just couldn't keep up. Great song, and I remember seeing him do it live a couple times on some YouTube clips, but whew, I couldn't keep up with this one. But I do, again, going back to the construction, again, this is off the coming off the disco influence. You can still hear a lot of the big brass and a lot of the horns, a lot of the sax, trombones, and trumpets, you know, prevalent through this song. Okay, I'm done.
All right, Q Storm. Q.
Yeah, this is another banger, man. I love what I love about this is the concept. And Mike, I'm gonna go back to the word you came up with. If it's juicy, we will do anything we got to hold on to it. We will work day and night to hold on to that stuff if we have to. This is pure funk. It's that clean falsetto again. And it's the, like Big Sexy said, it's the first time, it's the only time that we hear the hee-hee-hee, his traditional Michael Jackson tick. I love this. There's a lyric on here that just, I love it. It's so funky where he says, this is that pimp shit where he says, scratch my shoulder. It's aching. Yep. Make it feel all right. I love that. And again, with the breakdown, like I said, like most of them on the album, it's completely sparse except for that chicken scratch. Dunk, 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 dunk. That is just brilliant. And I so far, this album is perfectly sequenced, in my opinion. So yes. This is just number three of three. Well, I'd say two sublime songs and one good song.
All right. Aunt Pooh.
Now, you got to remember, I'm the youngin' over here.
Oh, here we go.
I'm sorry. This song just doesn't really do much for me. I understand.
You're fired.
I understand this is a classic Mac joint. The beat, yeah, I'm going to call it the beat, because that's the only thing I do enjoy about it. It's definitely on fire. I love the instrumentation, that the drums and all the different arrangements is great. But what is he saying? I mean, was there something going on in 1979 that made this the words more relevant? I just really can't get into it. I mean, I definitely could see myself jamming on there. And like everybody's saying, those ticks, this is like the genesis of those ticks. And it's just kind of annoying. It doesn't kind of work because you have this up-tempo, high track music going, and then you have this little ticks going in there. And, yeah, I'm sorry. I just don't feel this song. I really don't.
All right. Sean Hill.
All right. I mentioned earlier the 1-2-3 punch. This is the weakest of the 1-2-3 punch, but it's still a punch nonetheless. One of the things that's always made me think and wonder about these lyrics, since he did write the song, and at his age at that time, you know, where did he get this sentiment from? And I'm wondering if he wrote this in the guise of his father, of Joe. If this is stuff that he heard Joe saying to maybe Catherine or maybe other women throughout the years, like the scratch my shoulder, it's aching, make it feel all right. You know, they say that working's what a man's supposed to do, that, you know, that kind of thing. You know, because I don't think Mike would have really had those thoughts. So I'm wondering again if that was where the genesis of that from. But song wise, I like the song. I like it on the live CD better. There's a little bit more going on that, but it's not a great song. I won't put it in the pantheon of great like Q Storm. I think it's a very good song though.
Damn.
But it, wow. But definitely interesting lyrics though.
Can I just say real quick? I personally think that the lyrics in here are classic Jackson. I couldn't point to any other song off the top of my head, but I know that Michael, sometimes he writes so metaphorically that, like, one to me, one of his classic, metaphorical songs, and I think is one of his most brilliantly written songs, is Jam. And to me, this, the lyrics in this song, to me, just scream Michael Jackson.
All right. Well, let me add to this. To me, this song is absolute fire.
Thank you.
this you're going to sweat it out. You're going to get you moving. I love that when they break down that horn.
Yes.
That shit is filthy. Like, again, they were working it day and night recording this. This is fire to me. This is one of my favorite songs off this album. Even when I was a kid, I would just lose it when this came on. Again, you know, it's the same stuff I'm going to say all of these, but the way he's singing this song, again, there's just this energy about the way that he's singing it. I just drawn into it. I mean, that's aside from the music banging, the drums, the percussion. There's so much going on in here that most people don't even take the time to do a lot of the little things that they're doing. And I love it because they're playing it live. So, yeah, you get on them bells, you do the... It's all in it, and it's not just some looped up shit. If you really listen, I mean, the stuff changes up. I mean, the bass player, I believe is Lewis Johnson from Brothers Johnson. His stuff is ridiculous, and he'd be doing some stuff. He'll do one, and then he'll jump and do it. This song is nasty, man. this is a nasty track to me. Like,
certainly is.
Yeah, this is watermark stuff to me, but I can understand how it may not appeal to others, but for me, this is hands down classic Mike. And yes, I agree. It does, you know, the forebearer of, you know, as he really got more aggressive with the vocals. But here, at least, it's not over the top. And it's honest. You know, I feel that it's an honest way that he did it. Go ahead.
It'd be interesting.
No, just jump in real quick. I got to ask Ampu and challenge Ampu. You said you don't understand the concept of what he's talking about. I mean, the song is called Working Day and Night. He's talking about some woman that's on his back that he loves, and he is breaking his back to keep her happy. I mean, that's a universal concept. I don't understand what you're missing.
I got to co-sign that.
Because these young kids, they don't know about work, man. No, I'm just
joking. They don't know about good stuff. I don't know what it is.
Okay, that's what you want to go with, Q, really?
I'm asking you. Say something. Help me. Understand?
I'm sorry. I just can't follow the song. It doesn't move me.
I can understand that, but you're saying you don't understand. You didn't understand the lyrics. That's what I'm trying to comprehend.
Yeah, I listened to it. And I'm like, okay, I got me confused. I'm like, are you talking about were you working, or are you talking about relationship? It's just to me, I just felt it was like kind of all over the place.
I'm so tired, 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5.
But is he talking about working the woman though? But anyway, that's just
got me working day and night. Okay.
Well, he doesn't get it. We got it. He's not gonna change his mind.
Shut up, Q. Let's move on.
Let's move on. Yes.
One other thing about the vocal delivery, I'm wondering, and I wish we knew, you know, where this song came in the recording process. Was this maybe one of the last songs, you know, that he did, and he was trying to experiment a little bit with his voice, or just maybe it just came out organically while doing the song, you know?
I'm not sure. I know they did like hundreds of songs. Didn't they do like, I mean, they did a ton of music for this album.
They did a bunch of music for this.
And this was one of Michael's songs again too, right? He did this at the home studio and brought it in.
Yeah, isn't there a demo on
there? There is, yes.
Okay, I thought so, yeah.
All right, moving right along. Next up is Get on the Flow. And I will say this right now, for me, weirdly as I can say, this is probably my favorite song on this album. And reason why, this was, again, I said we had this song on 8-track. My mom had an 8-track player in her Toyota back then. And we used to always go to Chinese food every Friday night. But we would play Off the Wall all the time in the car. And I always remember being in the car and this song coming on and just driving at night. And it's just, so it's nostalgia for me, but this song is dope to me because I just like that. I mean, the bass line when he come in at the beginning, that shit is just nasty to me. And then Mike is just that's pulling like, you know, I jokingly do this, but this is going to sound weird, but remember at the end of the Jeffersons, the theme song, I mean, it's just that very soulful, you know, soul black type of sound. And in a certain way, to me, that's what he's doing there. And it's just real. I'm just like, damn, that shit is gonna die. And I mean, I don't even know what the hell he's, but it just sound, it dance with me. I'm done right there. I'm like, this nigga is filthy. This song, just every, this is banging to me, funked out. You know, I said, the song on Artificial Age, what was that, Clouds, when it starts, boom, chum, chum. To me now, again, I hear Bootsy, boom, oh, yes sir, baby, we're gonna get it in. You know, I could just hear him getting it in. He was a world's rhinestone cowboy, and then, so yeah, this song is one of my favorites. I still jam this song hard till 2014. Banger for me. We'll flip it up again. Q-Storm, what do you think?
Well, I'm glad you let me go next, because I think Sean's going to, I'm guessing Sean's going to echo what I'm about to say. Okay, first, the good thing. The good thing is about the song. The bass is ridiculous, pure funk. That's like you just said, that he's popping that bass, and then he's making it walk, and then he's popping it again. He's spanking it. It's just crazy. I love what Jackson is doing. It sounds like he's having fun, you know, the part with, what you gonna get down? What you gonna get down? What you gonna, you know, that part. I love the call and response. Why don't you just dance? And then he answers, because there's a chance for choices, and it's you I'm choosing. Mike is a Mac on this album. The problem I have with the song is that I don't think, at least on the verses, and this is going to be complete sacrilege, I think he was struggling to hit some of those notes. It sounds like he's screaming a bit. You know, there's no chance for chances, or whatever.
That's so
dope. I'm doing it falsetto, but it just sounded like he, it sounded like it could have been pitched a little bit lower. And I think it would have been a lot better. This is the one vocal performance of his, one of a few. It's not bad, but it sounds like I couldn't see him doing this in concert and maintaining his voice for 2 hours. It just sounds like it's a little bit high for him. But other than that, I think the magic of the song is the bass. So that's my take on it.
Okay, Sean Hill.
I'm not really a big fan of this song. And I don't know why, actually, but I was just looking at the liner notes, and maybe I've discovered it. I didn't realize that this is the only song on the album Mike co-wrote with somebody. So maybe that has something to do with it. You guys have mentioned, though, the parts of the song that I do like, the opening, that background, da, 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 that I like. But I don't know. I think for me, it's kind of relative to Don't Stop Till You Get Enough. And that song is just so much better. By the time I get to this one, I'm just like, I've already heard this one. Ready to go to the next song. Again, it's not a bad song. It's probably my least favorite song on the album, though. But that's not really saying much, but most of that songs on here are good. But yeah, not a fan of this one. And I think out of all of them, I think this is the one that dates the album the most.
I'm just going to add, the co-writer, Lewis Johnson, is the bass player. Actually, Lewis is from Brothers Johnson. He was the other brother. And, you know, he's one of those classic bass player dudes. I think they used to call him Thunder Thumbs or something like that.
Thunder Thumbs, yes.
Yeah, so he was definitely the dude back then. And it probably, I would imagine this, I don't know if this was before or after that Brother Johnson, the real popular album that they had with Strawberry Letter and all that. But I know they worked a lot with Quincy. But anyway, go ahead, Big Sexy.
All right, this one, it's like the Three Bears. You know, the first song, Don't Stop Till You Get Enough, good opening dance song. You know, very cool. Working day and night, too fast. This one, right in the pocket. Now I'm gonna date myself with some fashion choices back in the day. Back in 1979, we were wearing the crayon shoes. For those of you who don't recall those, they had the clear plastic soles.
Yes, yes, I remember.
Could not tell me. I was rocking the crayons. Had on my tie in the club. Well, the underage club, and this song is so moderately tempo, a little above moderate, but still in the moderate pocket. And you just walk up to a girl, oh, excuse me, baby, would you like to do this? Okay. And this comes on, and you just go out there, hey, what? I love this song. Love this song. You know, I can't disagree with Sean enough on this one sounding dated. I disagree completely. The only part I don't like is the part where it does a little, hey-hoo, hey-hoo. I didn't like that. But the chorus and the verses, all of that, perfect. And when it comes out of that little break and goes back to the chorus, man, this song is jamming. You know, this is a cut. Again, this is something I can take to the party now with my old butt and still set it off. You ain't said nothing on this one. I will Jerry curl up right now.
I love it. I will Jerry curl up right now. Man, that's a t-shirt.
Right now.
There's the one last thing I would say. There's a part in the song toward the end. He goes that. It's nice, man.
This song is the cut, man.
Aunt Pooh, what say you?
I'm sorry, Big Sexy. I will have to disagree and agree with Sean that this song is very dated. But that doesn't mean it's a bad song. This is right in the time with Rick James with that, what do they call that, rock funk. Is that what he was calling it?
And punk funk, man.
Punk funk. Okay, punk funk. And that disco era. And that is totally fine. This is something that if they still had a roller skating rink around in L.A., should be required on the required playlist. I'm loving the bass. Louis Johnson is killing it. I mean, even Prince has to listen to the song and be like, God damn, you did your thing on that one. Larry Graham have to pay their respects on that. I mean, the lyrics don't do much for me, but I mean, it's all about getting you to move and dance and skate and just feeling the vibe of the song. So I think it accentuates the instrumentation very well. I like the song, especially that killer bass line.
All right, there we go. Get on the flow. All right, next up is I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Next song was jamming. He's wrong, but yeah.
Next up is the title track, Off the Wall. When the world is on your shoulders, gotta straighten up your act and boogie down, boy. All right, we're gonna start with Aunt Pooh first.
This to me, I always think of as the prelude to Thriller. Just that opening with the heckling, the laughing, whatever that was, the spooky thing, and that doom doom doom, all that was going on. So I always look at this as the prelude to Thriller. I love the song. The song is just dope to me. He has some great harmonies for the chorus, which I think just works. The chorus itself, the "Live Your Life Off the Wall." Don't let the music. Sorry, I'm spacing out on the lyrics, but I'm saying overall the song's good. I don't know if it should be the title track. I mean, I think you should have went with "Rock Your."
Rock with you.
Yeah, rock with you. That should have been the title track as opposed to Off the Wall. It's just kind of weird to me. But I always feel like I think Off the Wall was probably going to be on Thriller. And I just think he ended up putting it up in here. I don't know why he ended up making the title track of the album. But for me, Off the Wall is a good one.
All right. Sean Hill.
All right. Earlier I mentioned the Rod Temperton thing. This was the song that and if you guys have heard the Off the Wall special edition, he talks about this song on the album, saying he wrote it specifically for the way Michael sings or say with the kind of staccato notes, you know, he said he wrote that specifically, those words for Michael to sing them that way, because he noticed that he liked to kind of sing the song that way. But I just thought that was interesting. But this is another. I think this is a great song. This is kind of the dark horse of the album. I think this is kind of one that gets overlooked. Again, his vocals are really smooth on this one. Everybody's on point as far as the music. This is kind of the younger, earlier version of Thriller, definitely, and maybe that's why this song kind of gets forgotten, because Thriller is definitely, I think, a better song than this.
What?
But yeah.
What? Hell no.
Co-sign that. Well, anyway, go ahead.
Damn. All right. This isn't an opinion show, right?
For sure.
Anyway, yeah, God, I lost my train of thought. That was
sorry about this.
That's all right. But no, I do like the song. There's nothing bad about it. Again, it's not one of the ones that I run to listen to. Oh, I got to listen to Off the Wall. You know, if it comes on the shuffle, I'll listen to it. You know, but it's not anything that I'll rush to listen to.
All right. All I'm gonna do is that this is all I got to say about the song. Living off the wall, standing by the wall, living off the wall. I don't know. Half the time I didn't know what they were saying. It just sounds dope to me. I'm into it. I love it. Banger. Q-Storm.
Yeah, I have in my notes here, the intro reminds me of Thriller. And actually, the song has pretty much the exact same tempo as Thriller. Now, I must say that I haven't listened to this album in a while, because when I did listen to it, I listened to it night and day. And then I kind of put it on the shelf, and pulled it out to do the review. And I have to say, it hurts me to say this, but this song doesn't really hold up for me. As a whole, I love Michael's vocals, the backgrounds, you know, tonight I'm gonna leave enough up. That whole part, the way he layers his vocals. But what really struck me was the keyboard. I think it's a keyboard bass. I think they interchange, like when it starts off, boom, 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 boom. I think that's keyboard. But then on the choruses, I think it's an actual bass. That the bass that starts off the song, it just, I don't know if it's because I'm listening to it with digital compression now as opposed to the vinyl, but it just sticks out and it's really annoying. It really makes the song it takes me out of the song. But it's a nice groove. I think the vocal arrangements are beautiful. I think the background layering is beautiful. It just doesn't really hold up for me. I won't skip it, but it didn't have the magic that it did maybe 10 years ago for me.
Right, Big Sexy and Sack.
You know, and let me educate you young people again. This song, again, you know, the comparisons to Thriller, I had never heard of them until just now, until you guys pointed those out. This song is another mid-tempo. See, this song can do double duty because you can play it in the club, you know, near the end of the night, just get out there and get the little lean back and forth like, hey, or, and this is what I did, and before they were called mixtapes, yes, yours truly had mixed cassettes. Bring them back to the house, start off with this, set the mood. That's right, baby, just leave it on the shelf. Enjoy yourself. Oh, yes. This song is perfect. It crosses all purposes. You can dance to it. You can Mac to it. Pfft, adult contemporary. Cross the board. Great song. And you tripping. There it is.
All right. Off the Wall. Next up, Girlfriend, which is actually written by Paul McCartney. So we'll go to Q-Storm first.
Well, obviously, again, you know, I think of this song and I think of The Girl Is Mine, because obviously this was written by Paul McCartney. He duets with Paul McCartney in The Girl Is Mine. It's a perfect light pop confection. The thing that stands out about this song is the vocal. This is the song, okay, on Michael's solo career with where he charts a new direction for himself. This, to me, is a song. If you listen to the vocal, this is the song why you should never try to fuck with covering a Michael Jackson song, because he holds these notes out for indefinite amounts of time. It's so smooth, and that vibrato is perfectly tuned. And the harmony, there's a harmony that comes in on the last verse that's just unbelievable. The bass is killing it. Now, the one thing about the song is when I first heard it, it was dope to me, but I was just like kind of like confused or found it humorous that we had this guy, I mean, beautiful vocal, but a very feminine vocal, talking about, we're going to have to tell your boyfriend that you're mine. which is a straight up pimp move, but I just pictured what I knew of Michael Jackson with this woman going to this dude saying, tell him you need to tell him this, and Michael getting stabbed in the heart.
it's gonna be like the Eddie Murphy, I'll talk to you for a minute.
But no, this is it's a beautiful song. It's a light song. And it's just a really pretty song. I like it.
All right. Sean Hill.
Q took the words right out of my mouth. Pop light. I actually have an affection for the song. I don't know. I just like that. Da, 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 da. Love that. I mean, again, Mike's vocals on point. You know, part of his good songwriting by McCarthy. There's really, I want to say there's not much musically going on because there is, but I just like it's just a playful little fun song. You know, there's it's not deep or anything like that. It's not really danceable. It's more that just kind of nod your head to, you know. So this one is one of my favorites of the. It was a single. I was going to say non-single, but I guess it wasn't a big hit. So I'll say it's one of my favorite album tracks. But we still haven't got to my favorite song on the album. But this is pretty close. This is probably at least top four or five.
All right. Again, I'm the same thing. The part where he's, we're gonna have to tell him if you wanna be a girlfriend. Boom, 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 boom. I mean,
that's what I like.
Mike just he gets me, man. Like, that's just his voice, the rhythm of it, and then the music kick in and it ramps up and I love it, man. This is one of my favorite songs. As a child, again, I used to sing. I tried to sound like him so much. I sang the hell out of this. I'm not saying I was good, but I loved it so much. Just, again, I'm big on the rhythm and the soul of his voice. Just magic, man. This guy had magic on this track. This is one of the dopest songs on here to me as well. And I will just say, so far, what we've gone in, if MTV had been around strong at this point, this would be the biggest album, not Thriller. Because so far... these songs are just ridiculous.
I don't know about that one.
I don't know about that.
Well, these songs so far blow out, in my opinion, the other songs. But we'll get into that at the end of it. But Girlfriend's dope. And Pooh, go ahead.
Well, I mean, I guess real quick, but I'd say Beat It and Thriller ensured that Thriller was the biggest selling album of all time. And all due respect, I mean, I love most of the songs on here. Definitely good music, but this album does not have a Thriller or a Beat It. That's what I'll say.
I disagree. Go ahead.
I would disagree with that too.
All right. Okay. We can talk. We'll take this offline, I guess.
Well, we'll do it after. we'll talk after we do it.
Okay. After review. These lyrics are just crazy, which, you know, seeing that it was written by Paul McCartney, I'm like, okay, because this is totally not Michael Jackson being able to create lyrics like this. I mean, essentially, he's snitching on himself, I mean, snitching on the girl, and then doing some dirty macking, talking about, tell him what you do to me day and night. I'm like, wow. That's just like a total departure from some of the stuff that I've heard Mike sing. But overall, I definitely love how in between each of the verse, they had a little da-da in between there, which is just like, again, a departure from a lot of the songs that's on the album that has that little that break during in the middle of a verse. And just the music is just real light. I don't know if did McCartney produce or play any instruments on this song?
No.
Oh, well, okay. That actually might help it. But yeah, overall, I definitely do like it. Yeah, real light and kind of a departure from most of the songs on the album with its more poppy feel to it.
All right, Big Sexy.
Can I say one thing, Mike? When you sure. started doing that part, you know, I died laughing because Michael's just this innocent kid who's in love, talking about this woman that does things to him, and he's just in love, just carefree. Talking about, let's go talk to your boyfriend. And then I picture some big buck nigga like Bob George. Big buck. And said, you need to, what the fuck, and just beating the shit out of him. Better take your happy ass on.
Hilarious.
I'm sorry. That little motherfucker with the high voice. Yeah.
All right, Big Sexy and Sack.
You know, to me, this, I'm going to use Aunt Pooh's phrase, this is a departure of sorts, but it's a departure back to familiar territory. This, to me, is something that could be on, like, going back to Indiana, you know, or Sky Rider, one of the later Jackson albums. You know, I don't dislike it, but it's kind of simplistic coming off of everything we've heard thus far. You know, and I'm not ripping Paul McCartney because Paul's usually better than this, but this one's a little too simplistic for me and the too calculated as a bubblegum type of deal and too cutesy, and I'm not with it. I'm not ripping it, but coming off of everything that has come before this, and I believe this will be the second song on the side two of the album. No, man, this one, yeah.
Wow.
I don't have much to offer yet, you know, past that.
Mm, all right. We got to shout out some of the musicians here. excuse me. Louis Johnson again on bass, John Robinson on the drums, Greg Fillinghames, electronic piano, David Foster is synthesizer, George Duke is playing, is on synthesizer, Wawa Guitar Watson on the guitars. Again, they have a whole horns section going on. Just amazing stuff, man. I mean, again, these are guys who know how to make some pop R&B joints. That's all I can say. They know how to write a song, man. Again, shout out to Quincy Jones for taking something that Paul McCartney did and making it into this, I would say, it's a bubble gum, but high water bubble gum R&B music from Michael. That's pretty amazing. He took some of these, you know, funk jazz musicians and did it, so. Next, we got everybody on this one, right?
Yeah.
All right. Next up is She's Out of My Life. And we will start it with Aunt Pooh.
Just put me right on the spot. I guess we had to talk about the elephant in the room and how Eddie Murphy and Delirious totally killed this song.
Damn, you took away my thoughts.
Took away, yep. Damn it.
But at the same time, I gotta give Eddie props because he kind of sang this hell out of the song. It's a great song that really shows Michael Jackson subdued his vocal and just put his vocals, forget the musicianship, forget even the lyrics, where he does show some passion and emotes that makes you feel what he's going through with this woman. But his vocals, where you just like, you know what, we forget the part that he can dance his ass off. Forget the part that he's Michael Jackson. This motherfucker can sing too. And he goes about in 3 minutes reminding you that, you know, hey, I can sing with anybody. And he makes you feel. I know this isn't the Prince podcast, but like I say with Sinead O'Connor's version of Nothing Compares to You, when you get that emotion, that raw feeling where you like, she's really going through something. She's really missing something. Whatever. I don't care. I say it.
So I'm saying you're comparing this song to Sinead O'Connor?
No, what I'm...
In terms of her performance?
Yes. Yes, I am. Because it makes you... This Michael Jackson's performance makes me feel like he meant every word of what he's singing and that he's going through it. And this is... It's not his best ballad, but it's definitely in his top three.
All right. Aunt Pooh has spoken. Big Sexy and Sack.
Aunt Pooh has spoken and spoken wrong once again. You know, the only thing good about this song is Eddie Murphy did crush it in Delirious. But anything past that, come on, man. Mike, you're better than this. Woo! You know, I'm saying it. You know, I've learned his position. Come on, Mike, man.
He's showing vulnerability. Damn. Don't get that from him.
What? Vulnerability? This is Michael Jackson. When was he ever the hard man in the room? Okay, he's always been vulnerable. That's bullshit. This song, again, the word pandering leaps to mind. You know, he's trying too hard. Now, on stage, this may work brilliantly. But on vinyl, man, this is some bullshit. No. No. It has, and it, yes, it did not make the Mac mix cassettes. No, it did not. This does not have any purpose for me. Poof. Be gone. On to the next album. Next album.
All right. Q-Storm.
Damn. I don't know what I'm hearing right now. I was going to say Eddie Murphy almost ruined the song for me, because after the Delirious, every time I'm listening to the song, you know, so I've learned too late. And I would always hear, Tito, get me some tissue. Jermaine, stop teasing. this is the song that proves that solo Michael on his own course, his vocals were no joke. The notes were all held, all steady. The vibrato was on point. It's simple. I mean, he could have done his a cappella and it would still have been as effective as this version we have. It's just that, I guess it's called a Fender or a Fender Rhodes. The bass and the strings come in on the bridge. It's just I don't think there's any overdubbing, and it works. There's no special kind of gating or reverb on his voice. It's just him in a booth. I'm sure the booth is dark. Maybe there's a blue light. And I'm assuming it's true. The legend is that they did maybe 30 takes.
Come on, Q, you take it.
Quincy wanted Mike, you can't be crying on the track. I don't know how a man could be so damaged that he would cry 30 times. We know.
Wow.
But I wonder, I hope that's true. And I think that sometimes Quincy Jones, just like with Billie Jean, he was trying to tell Michael, look, Michael, I could go out and get a deli sandwich. This intro to Billie Jean is so long. And Mike said, Q, we're keeping it in. I don't know what Quincy was trying to do, but you leave the crying in, because that sums up, that puts the period on this song. I mean, to capture that emotion, why would you try to wring that out of the song? So, to me, I'm sorry, Big Sexy. I can't get with you, man. This song is raw, and it's just him, a couple of instruments, and it's magic.
You know, I'll give you that. If they had done this as an a cappella, maybe. But the violins, nah, hell no, no.
All right, Sean Hill.
What's left? Pretty much said everything. As with everybody else, I can't hear the song without hearing the, you know, Tito, give me some tissue, Jermaine, stop teasing. You know, there's really nothing going on here other than Michael singing, which is it's great. This song isn't even on my off the wall configuration on my iPad or iTunes, so that tells you what I really think about it. I mean, you know, it is a good song, and in the pantheon of and I'm sure during the tour, whichever the Triumph tour, sure it brought the house down, but sitting listening to it on record, just it just does nothing for me at all.
Ah, wow. Well, I will just say this. For me, this is a Michael Jackson signature song.
Yes.
This is part of the pantheon. You can't have it. I'm sure every live performance that he probably did that was a real concert, they had to do this song. This is one of those songs to me. I can understand for some of the reasons you guys may not listen to it a lot. I don't listen to it that much either, but I know it word for word, and I think it is excellent. Again, the star of the show is his voice, and not only that, his performance, the emotion that he puts in, and I think that makes it one of his greatest recordings, period. For all the reasons I think Q-Storm said, I love this song. I think this is a point of the album. If you have all these dancing and the R&B and all this, for it to be able to break it down and do this is risky, and he nails it. And there's not very many R&B artists dudes who could have their regular album and then go to such an emotional type of song and actually kill it. And it works. I think it works within the frame of this, because it's different. But it's like, God damn, this guy is you reminded when he was a kid, like Ben or something. Like his voice is just magical, man. There's a distinctive sound to it.
I think the only thing that makes this record distinctive, in my view, is it's the first time that Michael cussed on a record.
He did?
I don't remember this.
Yeah, me
either. Damned Indecision?
Oh.
Come on. This.
That's good. But that's cursing. Damn is a cuss word.
You couldn't say it at your house. That would
actually. You're right. When I would listen to it, I would be singing along to it. I would always say "manned indecision" and curse pride. Hey,
all right.
Hey, Mike.
I grew up in the Bible Belt. What can I say?
I just wanted to add one quick thing. The one thing about this song that I blame.
Oh, hold on. Wait a minute. If you're eating in the mic, you gotta mute yourself. Thank you.
Well, that is.
Go ahead, sir.
Two quick things. I think on the live album, he actually makes this song even better. He adds little different vocal riffs on it, and I love when he says, "Can I come down there?" And the women just go crazy because Eddie made fun of that too. Yeah. But the thing about the song that I blame Michael for caving into is that he tried in a few songs sporadically try to recapture the crying magic, and I think I hated that he tried to do it in as recently as his last album Invincible, the song Cry, and tried to do it with Will You Be There and a couple other songs.
Whoa, somebody's got the mic craziness.
That was me. I was adjusting it. Sorry.
So I was disappointed when I was like, Mike, just let that be in the past and just do you now. You know, don't try to chase. That was one of Michael's biggest things. He would try to chase things that he had achieved in the past. And I just wish he would have kind of let that stuff go.
Well, his whole after Thriller, that was his career, trying to replicate Thriller. I mean, that was he spent his entire rest of his life trying to replicate that success, which was lightning in a bottle and would have never, ever happened again.
All right, let's get on to the next. Get Down, She's Out of My Life. I'm sorry.
Were we just there?
We just did that. The song is I Can't Help It. We'll go to Big Sexy and Sack.
Okay, now we're talking my language. This song goes right back to summer of 1979, hanging out in Clayton, California, trying to put the full press Mac on Joan McKinnon. This was on. The song is on the disco floor. I'm talking to him like, baby, bullshit, 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 bullshit. She's not buying any of it. And there's a portion of the song where he says, I can't help it, no. She hit me with that chorus. Crushed my game. Completely. Completely. It has scarred me to this day. Every time I think about Joan, I think about this song. I send her a message through Facebook saying, Joan, yes, listen to this song. Thought about how you crushed me on the dance floor. But I digress. Other than that personal history of embarrassment, this is some more adult contemporary vibe to me. You know, it's Michael being an adult, which is what a lot of people were looking forward to doing, because at the time, I can't think of any, maybe Stevie Wonder, but I can't think of any, you know, child musicians who really bridged and went into adult contemporary. You know, Stevie did, and I can't think of anybody else who really did, who came off the bubblegum, you know, circuit and went into some grown-up stuff. And this was showing that he was a full-on adult. It showed a little bit of confusion in the lyrics. I think it's a great song. And this, again, this is something else that still holds up. And yes, it was on one of the Mac cassettes back in the day. In fact, for our listeners, I can make you one of the Mac cassettes from back in the day if you need a little help closing the deal, fellas. You know who you are. Okay.
Now, what I had...
There's your
dial
1-900
Big Sexy for that.
All right, Ampu.
For me, because I just listened through Off the Wall for the first time Thursday.
What do you mean you just listened to it for the first time? Do you mean you've never listened to this album before?
The full album all the way through? No.
Didn't we fire him already?
Oh my God!
Well, that's interesting. Now that puts your opinion in context. So that's good.
Go ahead. No, I mean, of course, I heard "Don't Stop You, You Know, Rock With You," "Working Day and Night," "Off the Wall," and "She's Out of My Life." But I mean, as far as the other ones, no, I didn't hear them till about a week ago.
All right.
I can't. When this song came on, I'm like, wait a minute, I know that beat. De La Soul used it for their Balloon High mind state for Break It Down, which I'm like, okay, so that right there, it already pulls me in because I know it as a hip-hop beat. So I'm like, so I'm already can ride through it. I'm like, okay, there's a nice little beat. But then you listen to what Mike's saying, and this is a grown-up Mike, like Big Sexy to piggyback on what he was saying. This is a grown-up Mike that is putting that Mac on. Like, look, babe, you know, hey, I'm feeling you. And, you know I should just walk away, but fuck, I can't do that. I wouldn't want to do that. So just all the way through, just from the beat, which I could easily rock out to and just listen to because it's just so hypnotic with the bass line going through. And then the lyrics were like, you know what? I think I can spit some of these lines. The way Michael was flowing with it, it's an easy thumbs up for me.
All right, Sean Hill.
All right. Months and months ago, we were I think we were doing the Michael review, whatever the album was called. I said that there was a song that I think is not only Michael Jackson's best song, is also the best representation of his vocal stylings. This would be that song. This is the best song on the album. This is Michael Jackson's best vocal performance on record. To me, this is pure perfection of a song. Shout out to Stevie Wonder for writing it. My favorite part of this is the midsection where he scats, I guess, for lack of a better term. I don't know if that was intentional. I don't know if Stevie wrote it that way. But that portion of the song is sublime. There could have been a temptation to oversing this. And I would think since it was Stevie Wonder, maybe it would have been that way. But the way he sings every single line in the song is perfect. The love the way the fingers softly while you sigh. I mean, that's perfect. I mean, ooh, it's Sean, just. Sean. Oh, thank you. I guess the cold helps. Yeah, I cannot say enough about this song. I listened to it on my iTunes. When I was listening to the whole thing, and this particular song has about three times the amount of plays that the other songs have. That's how much I like this. I know one day I listened to the song like five times back to back. Even the fade out, even as he's doing the da-da-da-da-da-da at the fade out. I mean, I don't know. I know I'm kind of rambling here, but again, best song on the album, best Michael Jackson performance ever.
All right. Q-Storm.
Well, it's interesting you say it's the best Michael Jackson vocal ever recorded. I can't go there with you, but I will say this. The song is excellent. It's one of the signature songs on the album. I'd say when I first heard it, even – I can't remember how old. I was probably maybe – I was a teenager. And I first heard it, and I knew Stevie Wonder was involved. I grabbed the album cover and looked at the liner notes, and sure enough, Stevie, I don't know if he wrote, maybe he wrote it and produced it.
I know he wrote it.
Yeah, he wrote it.
Right. Okay. Right. Quincy Jones produced. Okay. So I'm going to try to break this down. To me, this song I put, and I have this these titles on my playlist, on two playlists. This is what I call sunset music or family reunion music. And what I mean by that, it's sunset music because there's something about that smooth bass that, and you guys on the West Coast can appreciate this out in LA. This is the song I just, in my dreams, you're hearing the song. It's a beautiful afternoon. It's that golden hour right as the sun is setting. You're driving along the Pacific Coast Highway. There's a light breeze. You got the top down. Your girl's down there. Maybe she pulls out a bottle of champagne or something. The ocean's off to one side, and it's just a beautiful palette. Just carefree, the way he's singing it, the instrumentation is just smooth, jazzy. I can't. It's just that feel that just makes me It's just that carefree. Everything's beautiful. I can't really express it what I'm trying to say, but it's that sunset music that Michael does so well for me. And the other category is that family reunion music, where you're in the backyard, you got the smell of ribs and chicken on the grill. It's late afternoon. Again, it's that golden hour, and y'all got the music playing. Everybody's grooving. And then this song comes on, and your aunt, she's like, oh, that's my jam. And y'all just.
Auntie, stop twerking now.
It's so dope. I mean, it's a great R&B track. Mm-hmm. I love the way... See, I would have thought Stevie produced this because Michael overdubs himself. He does it live. He doesn't... It's not... it's not like he recorded one vocal on the chorus and then they duplicated or copied that vocal and shifted it slightly to give it that fuller sound. It sounds like he is tracking himself on multiple tracks, at least two tracks. Like Stevie, I recall Stevie doing, in the 80s, 70s, and 80s. So I like that about it. This is just one of those songs. It's just, it pulls you in with this. It tugs at your heart. It's just got that warmth to it, and I just love... That's what I love about this song. I know I'm rambling, but I love this song.
So I'm alone so far as best vocal, right?
Say again?
I said I'm alone as far as the best vocal representation on record.
I can't give you best vocal.
And when you got songs like Lady in My Life, I can't say that this is his best vocal. No.
That's in the conversation as well.
Yeah, I would just say I agree with everything you guys.
In the conversation,
wow. What's that?
He said that's in the conversation.
Yeah, Lady in My Life.
I would agree with that.
I'm really interested in what you got to say, Mike.
Well, just going to say I co-sign everything you guys said. I mean, this is I could argue this might be the best song in the album too. You know, I kind of feel that way. This song to me is the song that, in my mind, the whole neo soul generation is like based off of this to me. Like, I don't know, for some reason I just feel like all that stuff, Maxwell, D'Angelo first album, some of the Lauren stuff, to me it just seems rooted in the style and phrase of the Stevie Wonder song with Mike's vocals on it. It is just killer. I really understand what you meant, Q, about the sunset music. I see it as driving in the summertime in the car with the top down. And it's nighttime and the city lights.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. Yes.
Driving by the water or something. But I get it. Yeah. It's that kind of ride, man. It's that song. It's a timeless track. And I think, if I remember what Aunt Pua said, this was the first time you heard this song, or at least you heard it sampled before. And now you hear the original. I would imagine, like, you were like, you even recognize, like, yeah, this is some shit right here. This is a dope, dope song. And I think this is the type of song, it doesn't matter when it came out, it's timeless, perfect, perfect type of stuff. As I was listening to it and listening to you guys talk, I was thinking it would have been interesting if it was just a stripped-down album of just R&B, core R&B stuff. I mean, this song sits toe-to-toe with Rock With You. Like, I think it's just, they're flawless, flawless type of songs, and they're just incredible. I think this song is very popular with people, but I almost kind of wish it needs to be bigger. You know what I mean? Like all the other Michael. That's why when I was saying earlier, when you get into the Billie Jean's and all that kind of stuff, I mean, those songs are smashes, but this is like high watermark. Yeah, it was released before, MTV, and some of the opportunities he would have to spotlight his talent weren't there when this album came out. But this song is top bar songwriting and production across the board. So,
I would go ahead and say that this song could be released today, just based on the music alone, let alone the lyrics. It could be released today with a couple of kicked up drum beats and a little more bass.
No,
leave it.
I'm just saying to the mass music listeners today.
No, you know what? I think it not sounding like the other stuff of today, it would be one of the reasons why it would be like a knife just cutting through all the shit. And it was like, God damn, this is so smooth and melodic and intoxicating, inducing. It would make it the difference that it didn't have the bombastic sound to it.
I definitely want to ask both this question for both Mike and Q. Because I know you guys both are the vocalists, Michael. What do you guys feel about that midsection where he's just scatting?
I think it's beautiful.
I think it's what Michael does. He does that. That's part of Michael. I mean, he does the scatting. Like he's going to get to a point in his career where that's pretty much the only way he sings anything. But so I think it's, you know what it reminds me of is that breakdown in the remix of State of Shock. You know, that kind of just, you know, even though this is smoother, my point being is that he can do things with his vocal that so many people can't. And that's what makes it special to me. It's nothing great. I don't mean it that way. It's nothing dynamic or anything special, but it's just simple and it's Michael. So yeah, I'm with it.
To me, that's what pushes this song over the edge for me. That midsection. I mean, it's scatting, and it's probably a different term, but it's melodic. It's so. I mean, he's. I know you're singing notes, but he's singing the medley. He's humming it, you know, and it's just when he hits that one long note, da 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 da, and I know I've messed it up, but that part, you just go, Michael, you the man. You the man.
All right, let's get on to the next track. It's the falling in love that's making me high. man, so you already know I love this one. But so I'll start on this one. This is, at a certain point, I kind of had this sort of as a lesser song of the album. But man, over the last years, I just, God, this song just speaks to me because I just like that. First, I like the music. It's very classic kind of R&B duet type of a song. Like, I could see a lot of people doing this song. But again, the way Mike is singing it, I'm all into it. But I'm probably even more so a fan of the music on this track. Just to me, is just dope. I like the guitar playing. Everything about it, man. It, because of the way it's positioned on the album, I've never really took it as serious as I do now, but now, like I said, this is one of those I always play this song too. I love this song. It's not the greatest on here, but I really adore this song. I don't think I've ever heard him do this live, but I would love to. So anyway, let's see. We'll go to Sean Hill.
This song has the misfortune of following up my favorite song on the album, so I haven't given it the love that it so richly deserves. excuse me. I really haven't, you know, delved into it too much because, again, it's an album track. It's kind of buried on the album, but going back and listening to it for this review, I got a new appreciation for it. Definitely, I'm gonna have to give it a few more spins before I can really give it a higher rating. But it's a good album track.
All right, Big Sexy and Sack.
You know, gentlemen, I've said this many times. I'll say it one more time because it fits here. We are all men of the world here. This song to me is very personal because there's a woman back in my limited tenure in high school was trying to get at me. Why? Because I played football. So we got together one day at her place, and the word tease comes to mind. I'm thinking it's going to be a little something. It was a lot of nothing. And this was in the background, and she's trying to sing it. I'm like, you know, baby, don't. Stop. Oh, I can sing. No, you can't. No, you can't. And then it just went to hell from there. I'm not going to get into what was discussed because that's a whole nother issue, probably for a place in this world. But I'm like, you know what? I can't get with this song. It reminds me of that woman. I'm not even going to mention her name because I don't want to give her any whiff of shine. But having said all that, from a construction standpoint,
Big Sexy swears she's listening.
Fuck her. From a construction standpoint, this song is, this one to me sounds a little dated. You know, the horn section sounds a little too like something you hear with the OJs or the Spinners.
Hey,
something. Well, I'm not, whoa, not ripping. And that was the same time as this came out too, right around that time.
I've been rocking the Spinners so hard the last 2 weeks. But anyway,
Spinners are the shit, man.
Yeah, they're killing.
Well, I'm just saying it as a comparison. That's all. That's all I'm saying. I'm not ripping the Spinners. I like the Spinners.
Right now.
All right. But that song reminds me too much of something that was in that genre, as opposed to something that Mike was doing. And to me, it sounded like, with the energy of the first like six or seven, sounds like he started running out of gas. You know, just from a creative and production standpoint, it sounds like starting to get a little tired here. You can't keep that pace up through the entire album. It's just not possible. So this one is a little bit of a step not backward, but step down for me.
Oh, okay, that was
I'm sorry.
All right, Q-Storm.
Well, when I was first rocking this album hard, I would have put this song in amongst the greatest of all the songs on this album. As I listened to it, and like I said, I haven't listened to this album for quite a while, but listening to it now, this is easily my least favorite song on the album. And the reason being is because, to me, I don't know if it's going to make sense, it's the most calculated of all the songs to me. I listened to it, and I think Big Sexy said, it does sound a little dated. I mean, the whole album, obviously, the album was produced in the late 70s, but a lot of these songs still hold up. This one does not. I don't know if it's the... it's not like something you might hear on Tootsie or some Hallmark spot or something like that. It just sounds like I could just picture the suits at Epic. I think this was on Epic's label.
Yes.
Saying let's put Michael with a female and get a duet out of him. And they chose someone. I mean, I know who Patty Austin is. I like the song "Getting Away with Murder." But if you're going to do that, why don't you go with someone who has a little bit more profile? So, I mean, Michael has that very light tenor, I'll say feminine tenor. It's like, and I don't like it when he duets, like when he did the Syeda Garrett. I just can't stop. It's the same kind of thing. It's like, yeah, it's just kind of bland.
So it's not like, put him with Millie Jackson?
Oh no!
Somebody.
No!
Since we're on the cusp of the end of disco, maybe like a Donna Summer or somebody like that. I don't know, but the song's not a bad song. It just doesn't pick me up like it used to. I like it when it gets to the end where he's like, yeah, I'm falling in love. When he does that part,
yeah.
It starts to get some life to it, but then it fades out. So.
He's like, come back.
It's still a good song. I don't skip it, but it's just it's easily my least favorite.
All right, Sean, did you get on? You didn't get on this yet, did you?
Yeah.
So we got everybody.
You can get Ann Poo.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll be real quick. This
get the youngin.
This is sugary, syrupy, sappy.
Yeah, and
I'm just not feeling it. It's just. It's like he's trying too hard to be that sweet, nice guy, and I'm gonna love you, and I'm gonna hold your head and lay you in the bed, and I'll caress your back and rub your forehead, and
I didn't get all that from the song.
And we'll just talk and just lay here till the sun comes up, and you know I really love. Nah, I'm sorry, this song is just too sad. The music is good, but that lyric is just kind of lose me. Like, dude, you just got through some hardcore macking. You even did some dirty macking, and now you up there like I'm gonna love you. So nah, I'm not feeling this song.
All right, so the last song on the album, "Burn This Disco Down."
Out.
Excuse me. I'm thinking of something else, right?
Burn this bitch down.
That Ferguson in you, huh?
Sorry about that.
Hands up.
Yeah. Sorry. Non-violent.
Wow.
But yeah, "Burn This Disco Out." Last song. Listen, again, as I did on a lot of these things in the song, just speak for themselves to me. The part where when DJ spins the sound, yeah. I'll admit there's a lot of disco-y type of stuff in this, but it's just so funky in the way he's doing it. I would even come down off my pedestal of Michael to say that some of this I could understand how this song may sound a little dated, but dated or not, I still think this is funky. I still think it works. Some of the instrumentation doesn't go on today, but that's because today sucks. But I like, it's a good way to end the album. I'm jamming, going on, you know. I was like, damn, he left me dancing. You know, let's get it. We gonna burn this disco out. We gonna really rock it. So I rock with the song heavy. I love it. And Pooh,
I have to co-sign. The lyrics don't do much for me, but you know, it's ain't about the lyrics. It's about getting your ass on the dance floor and cutting the rug and hopefully taking the fly honey home that night. I think that little part is a dun 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 dun, and I can hear some of the piano up in there too. I think this is one of the best instrumentation put together for a song on the album. One of, and I can see myself grooving to this one if it was like a throwback Saturday party. So yeah, thumbs up for me.
Right, Sean Hill.
All right, I misspoke earlier. I said that. Get on the Floor is the most dated. This is the one I was talking about, was the most dated one. But that's not a bad thing. You know, it, any song that's got the title disco in it's going to probably be a little dated. But it's a good song. It's a good way to close out the album. You know, it's primarily a, you know, a dance kind of, you know, album. So what better way to close it out than to burn the disco out, so to speak. So I think – Mike, you had made a point of the vocals again. I think he really does a good job with singing these lyrics this time around. So yeah, I really like the song. This is another kind of dark horse for me. It's most dated, but also one of my favorites on here also.
Everybody just get on down. Q-Strong.
Yeah, I love this song. I think of this song, I mean, the title metaphorically, not only it does two things. It tells you get your ass on the dance floor, and it says, look, disco, it's going away, and we're gonna cap it off. This is its last hurrah, and then we're gonna burn it out. And we're gonna leave that where it was, and we're gonna go out with a bang. But I think this, you guys are saying what I was thinking, that it's a dated song. I didn't think it was necessarily dated, but hearing you define that, I have to agree. But it doesn't make it bad. And when I think of, when I hear the song, it reminds me of the ending of the Triumph album with the song "Wondering Who." I don't know if you guys remember that song. I get them confused every now and then because they both have that kind of funky, you know, '70s yeah. rock to them. But when I hear the song, I picture that Soul Train line, and your man Rerun comes out, and, <pop-locking>. And then I picture JJ coming out doing the robot.
Yeah,
but it's balls to the wall R&B funk. It's got a nice structure. I think Aunt Pooh said, you know, the way the song's put together it's great. And I love the structure of it, like the little B verse. So DJ spin the sound. You know how it goes into that little thing to take you into the chorus. And I think it's an excellent way to end the album. I mean, this album to me. Just on it, just the sequencing alone make this a perfect album.
All right, Big Sexy.
This is my least preferred song on the album. It sounds like it's a Jackson's album, and when Q said it sounds, you know, it's reminiscent of Wondering Who, I can easily see him performing this with the brothers on like the Cher show or like the Carol Burnett show back in the 70s. I don't think this one stands up to everything else on this album. It does not dilute the impact of the album as a whole. But this one, I'm glad it's the last song in there because I never listened to it. Never. I listened to it earlier today. It just does not work for me. You know, everything is there, but it's just not working. You know, the pieces are there, but the total sum of what we have just is not working. You know, the horns are just too much and I just don't care for it.
All right. So we have come to the end of our track for track review analysis. Now we're going to give our overall views on the album itself. I'm going to spend my 2 minutes doing mine here. End of the day, Off the Wall album, excellent album. I would say, and I don't even feel I have to argue it, but I know I do. This is better than Thriller.
Yes.
This is the better album than Thriller.
Hands down.
The songs on here are excellent. I think this comes from a more honest place than the Thriller album does, though I think the Thriller album is great, but I just got to put that out there. I think this is the album that you could take of Michael Jackson and say, look, it has everything for the most part that made Michael great. It has the hard dance driven rhythm tracks. It has the very lush R&B tracks. It has that, you know, the lone Michael, very emotional, singing Michael, stripped down to just his voice. I think this easily also stands in the echelon of one of the better R&B albums of all time, probably in the last 30 years. I think this is a watermark for R&B. At the time, it definitely was, in my opinion, from what I understood of R&B, in terms of bringing it more into a pop mainstream audience. This took the funk and the R&B music and put it that it could be, you know what, anyone can listen to it. It's not too R&B or something. I just feel like this is one of those albums that, again, you could have been in heavy metal. You could have been in country, classical music, jazz, anything in this album. There's something, there's a few songs, if not three or four, this album that you couldn't help but tap your toe to, dance to, or you couldn't help but not sing the songs. The songs are very catchy, and not in an annoying way of catchiness. I think Rock With You is a perfect example of that. It's not an annoying song. You can hear that over and over again, and you won't be annoyed by it. You might just, okay, I've had enough, but it wouldn't be like, God damn. Like a lot of these songs, and even some songs back then, they became annoying because they weren't really that good. It was just, they had that very catchy hook, but that was it. But this has the catchy hooks, but it has that emotional strength that Michael brought, which I think is his power, is that he, like the songs that he writes, a lot of his songs are just probably are developed from grunts and sounds. And it's like, okay, let me put words to these sounds that I'm making or to this rhythm that I'm feeling. And I think it comes from a guttural place where it's like your body can't help but respond to it. That's why I think he works. Sometimes he probably went to the dancer stuff because he felt it. And he's like, I'm going to make a song out of this rhythm that I'm feeling my body do. And that comes across perfectly. Don't Stop Till You Get Enough. I think Working Day and Night speaks to that as well. And then lastly, I will say him collaborating with Quincy Jones was a brilliant move. One, it was brilliant on Quincy's part to take everything that he had done. And again, Quincy Jones is not like these producers of today. You know, he had orchestrational background, jazz. So he had all the stuff that he's been drawing on. He's putting in all this work and honing his craft. And when it's time to say, you know what, let's do a mainstream R&B pop record. He's drawing from years of master work. He understands how to do it. So he doesn't have to copy somebody else's stuff, but he knows exactly what's going to work with people and that's going to be quality. And he said, you know what, let's go get the best musicians.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah.
To get he knows who to popping. Yeah.
Yeah. He knows who to call to get what he wants too.
Right. And that's what a producer is supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know, a real producer. And I'm looking at all of the artists when I say that. It's just like
supposed to be all on your tracks, all in your music videos like that.
Not when you're trying to make something like this. You know. Yeah, I know what you're saying. But even like you know, and I hate to do this, but I will because that's what I know. It's the difference between like Prince as a producer and a Quincy Jones, Michael as a producer. Now, Prince, because he's in a different sort of realm, he's going to play it all himself, whether because he can or because he just wants to. He may not be the best player, but he can play his stuff well, and he doesn't have the time to go get some really other dope musicians and sit there and work on those songs and have them done, you know, to the fullest of their capacity. A lot of his stuff is purely in the moment, which I like that. You know, which is what I like about him. But here's where you have a real producer who doesn't, I don't know if Quincy plays anything, but I do know he has an ear and he knows how, as like a director would. A director is not going to sit there and edit the movie for the most part all the way by himself, or shoot it all by himself and light it all by himself and act it all by himself. He is going to assemble a crew of professionals that do their shit tight, and he's going to orchestrate it. And that's what Quincy did here, which is why I will say, and why I wanted to start with this album. This is one of the greatest albums of all time, period. I'm done. Q-Storm, go ahead.
Well, I got to give you respect for some of the words you just said. If someone were to say to me, which album is better, this one or Thriller? Someone said it earlier. If you had a gun to my head, I'd be a dead motherfucker, because I'm not prepared to say that this album is better than Thriller. But I'm not going to argue with anyone that says that, because Thriller, and this is going to go back to an argument we had a few years ago, you and Sean, and I side with Sean. This album, while it opens up the door to get out of the disco era and come more into a new era of R&B, this was Michael Jackson's last, to me, pure R&B album.
Thank you.
And it was the beginning of him. And this is why I think you might, Mike, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but I think this is why you can confidently say that this album is better than Thriller, because as brilliant as Thriller is, you can see the cogs moving in the production of Thriller. We need to put a Beat It in here, a rock song. We need to put some of that funk in here, PYT. We need to put a ballad in here, Pretty Young Thing. Let's get a light pop confection in here. Okay, call Paul McCartney. He's going to do it with you. You can see that in Thriller. Here, I think you said it, Mike. This is just, this album knows what it wants to be, and it commits to it, and it does not let go of that. Except for, maybe, in my opinion, it's The Falling in Love. This album says, we are R&B. This is our audience. This is our demographic. We're going to give them some for that ass, and we know what this needs to be when we finish it. So I could see someone saying this album is better than Thriller in that sense. And I think this album is proof of what, I believe it was Moonwalker that Michael wrote. He said that when you're writing a song, if you're a songwriter and you can craft a melody that people can hum or whistle, and if your lyrics are such that people can sing along with the song, you got a hit. And I think that plays out. I mean, obviously, Michael's got that vocal that can't nobody match, but you can hum every one of these songs, you can sing along at your own level to every one of these songs, you will remember every one of these songs. I mean, this is one album, I know the sequencing in my sleep. I could tell you what song comes after what song comes before, whatever. And that's why this album is such a classic. Just one of the reasons why it's such a classic.
All right, we're going to go to Aunt Pooh.
Now, I understand me being the youngin' and stating that I've never heard this album all the way through till the first time a couple of days ago, but I'm sorry, I'm not prepared to state that this is better than Thriller, commercially or critically. I think that while this is, to Q's point of this being truer to Michael Jackson's roots and him just putting out an album based on his based on what he wanted to put out there and produce and just feeling the music and feeling the vibe at the time, I think Thriller was a little more daring and experimental. I mean, we can argue that for another time. As a whole, I got to say that there are 6 good tracks on this album. And, 6 out of 9, that's a really dope album. But at the same time, he has some very memorable tracks, some iconic tracks that to this day people can still listen to and don't feel dated or don't feel old. They can just listen to and just say, God damn, this is some good music. That's a good track. Especially, what is the one? I Can't Help It. Shh. God damn. I can't believe I never heard that one before. So overall, Michael Jackson did his thing. Quincy Jones did his thing. And yeah, it did one of the greatest albums of all time. One of them. Top 20, 25, I'll say.
All right. Big Sexy and Sec.
You guys spoke about production. You know, Quincy Jones is the be-all, end-all. The guy has got a house full of Grammys for millions of production things he's done, some of which we are all familiar with, some of which we have never heard of. Quincy being the one guy who can pick up the phone and get exactly who he wants to step on an album that he feels fits. The classic example is when Quincy called up Eddie Van Halen for Beat It. You know, that didn't happen. But Eddie said, yeah, I'll do it, and I'll do it for free because you're Quincy. That's great. This album, to me, is better than Thriller simply because the two standouts in the Thriller, you take off Billie Jean and you take off Beat It, what do you got? Everything else does not compare with Off the Wall. It just doesn't.
Okay, I don't know about that.
Lady in My Life, that's Lady in My Life, best song on the album.
Yeah, PYT. Thank you.
What's the second track on? Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Big.
Going back to production standpoint, Quincy is a rare producer in a sense that Quincy will collaborate with the artist and get out of the way. Mike mentioned Prince, and Prince and Babyface and Teddy Riley, to that matter, all leap to mind because they all have a sound. When I heard Babyface produce Eric Clapton, I'm like, it's a Babyface song. So you're not really getting an Eric Clapton song or whoever they're producing. You're getting a Babyface song that he just happens to be guest starring in. Quincy, on the other hand, said, Mike, what do you want to do? Oh, I want to do this and this and this and this. Fine, let's make it happen. You know, a lot of guys or a lot of people who produce let their ego get in the way, and Prince is notorious for this. You know, and Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis to a lesser extent. But they'll say, look, let us lay it all out. You come in, sing what we tell you to sing. That can work. It worked for Janet Jackson on Jimmy and Terry's productions. With this, this was so organically done. They met on the set of The Wiz, started talking about doing something together. Mike said, I got a bunch of ideas. Quincy said, let's hear them all. Okay, I know who we can get for this. I know who we can get for that. And Quincy got his ego out of the way and called the best people at the time. And, you know, a lot of them are still the best now. And they all put it all together and got it done and created a masterpiece. And that is not a word I give up easily. But this song transcends every genre. It's that album. It's the one that everybody either has or knows. You know, no one can say anything bad about it. The only thing people could say that's negative relatively is the debate of it being better than Thriller. That's fine. You know, if that's the only negative thing you can say about an album, then you did pretty fucking good. I think it's his masterpiece. I think it's the best he's done. And I think it was the best he's done because he wasn't comparing it to anything. When he did Thriller, he wanted to top this. When he did Bad, he wanted to top Thriller. With this, he just wanted to go out, stretch out on his own, do his own thing, and this is what we got. And this is brilliant. If you put the machine media, social media that we have now behind this, back then, this thing would crush Thriller in sales. Crush it.
I just want to throw one thing in, then we're going to go to Sean. I think, too, that this album benefited greatly from Destiny. I could pull maybe two songs, in my opinion, are on the level on Destiny that are on the level of this. Like, I think Mike was inkling toward this quality. For me, Destiny was a powerful album. Some of the songs were just as great, and Quincy was not on that album at all. Go ahead, Sean Hill.
All right, and Q, you stole my argument with my argument. No, that's okay. Because I was going to bring that up, but you've done it. I have always said that this album is better than Thriller. Of course, not commercially, not socially impactive wise, but just a better collection of songs than a Thriller. That doesn't make Thriller a bad album. This is just better. On that infamous show that we had the discussion, I still feel that Michael seemed to have a lack of faith in the material, but I just seem to he put less importance on this material than Thriller, Bad, and so on and so forth. So, and maybe that's why it's kind of lost its way throughout since its release, because he doesn't really put a lot of emphasis on the songs in his stage show and whatnot. But with the inclusion of, you know, Don't Stop to Get Enough, Rock With You, working Day and Night, that's a 1-2-3 punch that Thriller doesn't have, in my opinion. And then with I Can't Help It, that's just the icing on the cake. I think Big Sexy just said this was the time where Mike, you know, was wanting to kind of stretch his legs as an adult, prove, you know, he was 18, 19 years old at the time. So he's doing something different, doing something a little bit more, quote unquote, manly. And it worked. A lot of people say that this was his first solo album, and it was. It was like his fifth, but it was definitely his most successful and definitely his first, being a grown man. I wish this album was a little bit more, you know, known in the pantheon of the Michael Jackson canon. But hey, we listen to it, we like it, so I guess that's all that matters. But yes, this album is better than Thriller. I would rock it any day over Thriller any day.
Can I throw something out there, Mike?
Certainly.
Sean, you just touched on something that reminded me of something I wanted to say. You know, Michael Jackson was 19 when he recorded this.
Somewhere in that area, yeah.
1920. Well, I don't know if I have this right, but I believe legend has it that Michael, and you guys can correct me if I have it wrong, Michael approached Berry Gordy in his office and said he wanted out of the Jacksons, I think it was.
No. The Jacksons were not on Motown. That was Jackson 5. When they left Motown, Berry kept the name Jackson 5. Cock. I started to go to the Jacksons when they went to Epic.
Well, did he have a confrontation with someone and who broke his contract so he could go to Epic? Do I have that right?
No. What happened was when their contract ended, they wanted to leave as a group, which means Michael wanted to leave, and because they wanted to produce and write their own stuff. And at the time, Motown was all about, we got these writers, you sing what we want to sing. And coming off of Stevie Wonder and Marvin Gaye having to fight to get their own, you know, artistic vision made, Michael was the same way. And Barry's like, you know what? Y'all can bounce. So they did. Jermaine stayed, punk.
They all...
Jermaine stayed.
Hold on. They all went to Epic as the Jacksons, right?
I believe they first went to Philadelphia International.
Right.
Or at least, yes. Yeah, as the Jacksons, and they went to Epic as the Jacksons.
Okay. But I seem to recall reading in one of his biographies where he stepped out as a man and demanded that he be able to record his own solo album. I thought that's what I read, but maybe I got it wrong.
Well, he wanted to do that, Barry had the cats under the thumb, which is why I am not a fan of Barry a lot. I mean, I appreciate what he did, but Barry was, bottom line, is a record guy, which means it was his way first and damn creativity. And so, when they left, he got a chance to stretch out and do his thing. So I was all happy with that.
So but for Quincy approaching Michael on the set of The Wiz, this may never have happened. Am I correct?
Very possible.
With this album, you mean?
Well, I mean, I'm trying to determine if Michael had determined he wanted to go off on a solo career when they were the Jacksons with Epic, was he pursuing producers, or did Quincy come up to him and say, hey, you know, I want to produce a solo album for you?
I think obviously this wasn't his first solo album, so I think he intended on doing some solo work.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe the legend I'm thinking of is what you just said, Big Sexy, that he stormed into Berry Gordy's office and said, I want out. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Okay.
I think he had already started to plan the album, while the movie was being made, and they started talking. And Quincy's like, I'd like to do it. And he's like, you would? Yeah. Let's go.
Okay.
Yeah, because there was a 4-year gap between his last solo album, which was Forever Michael, and I dare you to name a song off of that, and then to Off the Wall. So there's a big, huge time frame from one solo record to the other.
All right. So, yeah, man, Off the Wall, Michael Jackson. If you don't have it, get it. Listen to it again. If you haven't listened to it in years, pull it out, man. Pause. And take a listen to it, because it's a very great piece of work. Still stands up today. There's some very classic works on there. And we'd love to hear what you guys think about Michael Jackson's Off the Wall. All right.
You get to see a chunky, kind of a chunky Michael Jackson on the cover, debuting the Wars.
Well, they've changed the cover, unfortunately.
Yes, they have. That
now? They've changed the cover, actually, which I don't agree with. But it's not the same cover as when we had bought the album.
Yeah, now it's just his feet.
Yeah.
Why did they do that?
Can we talk about that pose for a second?
Sure, yes. Go ahead.
Is that the most awkward looking pose you've ever really seen? It's like, I don't know. Okay, Mike, put your hands up. Okay, what am I supposed to do now? Well, make it look natural. I can't. Okay, snap. And I mean, it just doesn't. It looks like, for a guy who is so into his image, and maybe he wasn't that much back then, I think that's just it's just a terrible picture, in my humble opinion.
Why did they change the cover?
I personally don't know why they changed it, but it's definitely it's his feet with the maybe they're trying to go for the iconic, you know, high water pants with the shiny socks, I guess.
Yeah, that's why. That is the reason. Yeah.
But the album, it was the album format, the dual fold format.
Yeah.
You folded it out and you could see both of them.
The whole thing, yeah.
Well, since obviously they're not making that anymore, so.
So you just shrink the picture. It doesn't make sense to me.
I would imagine, you know, again, this is what Sony, I'd imagine they must base their decisions, I hope, off of focus groups or something. Maybe they just felt a more iconic vision of Michael in the 21st century is that it has that iconic feat.
I know why they did it.
People didn't recognize that it was Michael Jackson.
That could be it, too.
Exactly.
He does look different.
That's not out of the realm of possibility, either.
But, you know, regardless of the cover, excellent record. Check it out. Definitely let us know what you think of Off the Wall. With that, we're going to wrap things up. But look forward. We will be, we haven't decided yet exactly what we're going to do. But we're going to do another classic album for this show. This is Classic Joints. And as always, before we get out of here, we got to go around the room so you can find everybody online. Q-Storm, where can they reach you online?
You can find me at qstorm.com/lightningstrikes. You can find me on Facebook as Michael Jones, Twitter, qstorm3476, and on YouTube as The Real, R-E-E-L, Qstorm.
All right, Mr. Sean Hill.
All right, you can find me on Twitter at Hill Street Views. You can also find me on Facebook, Sean Hill, and also Real, R-E-E-L, Movie Talk, and the blog, hillstreetviews.blogspot.com.
All right, Big Sexy and Sack.
Twitter, Big Sexy and Sack, and Facebook under Mark Wiggins.
Mr. Ant Poo.
Twitter and Instagram at Ant Poo. New column, Formula One Mania tomorrow, Comic 8 Ball. New column on KnockoutNation.com and AllHipHop.com, Breaking Kayfabe.
All right. Lastly, follow Podcast Juice on Twitter, at Podcast Juice. Also, find us on Facebook. Just look up Podcast Juice. And also, as a reminder, please check out Podcast Juice All Access. It is a way to access our over 9 years of podcasts that we've done. A lot of funny and insightful things there. Like I always say, work it like a job. We'll see you next time. Peace. You're an angel in disguise.